We are now at the end of Lent, and honestly, I don't know how I'm doing. You see, my Lenten journey this year has been a little different than normal. I have been journeying with Mary. Most of us don't think of Mary during Lent. We're too busy thinking about penance and fasting. But Mary is so central to our faith, and it's appropriate to make any journey with her. In particular, at least for me, it's hard to think about the cross and not think about Mary. And there is one feast that always happens during Lent when we particularly focus on Mary, and that is the Solemnity of the Annunciation of our Lord. I think Lent is a very good time to journey with Mary. Think how Mary's own journey takes her to the cross. A sword pierces her soul too. And she's there at the foot of the cross when Jesus commissions her to be the mother of the world. Praying to Mary or walking with her is not something that comes easily to me. I prefer to go straight to Jesus. But if God Himself entrusted the salvation of the world to this woman, to Mary, and Mary's yes led to the birth of Christ, then I guess I can also entrust it all to Mary, who also was necessary for the birth of the church at the foot of the cross. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this is the Salt and Light Hour. Hello and welcome to an all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro, and sitting here with me is Billy Chan. Billy, it's good to see you.
Hello, Deacon Pedro. How are you?
I'm good. And you're just come back from a holiday, or it was a holiday.
It was a vacation. Yes.
Was it a Lenten vacation?
I did not take like more than a week vacations for like the past 10 years. You believe it?
Nice.
So I took a 2 weeks vacation to go to Japan.
Nice. Japan. Okay.
Yeah.
First time?
It's my first time. And the food was amazing.
I can imagine. Yes. I like Japanese food. And the culture is so different and so unique that I think it would be beautiful.
It's very different. You know, the past journeys I had, like travels I had, was always Europe.
Yep.
So I can always attend like different churches, different cathedrals, a lot of like Christianity culture in Europe.
Yes.
In Japan. So it's interesting.
Not in Japan. Okay, good. I hope to hear more about your trip and look at your pictures later. Today, Billy, Jermaine is going to join us. And Jermaine, as you know, is our book contributor, and he's always reading. And so he's going to be with us in about 5 minutes to tell us about some of the books that he's read. He usually has a children's book and then a book that's not for children, for adults, something to help with our faith, presumably. So that's book ends with Jermaine Bagnell in about 5 minutes. So that's coming up. And then Billy, Church for Dummies. What's your question today?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions after visiting Japan, which is not a Christianity country.
Okay.
And yeah, there will be a lot about Japan, this question.
Okay, I'm curious now. Did you go to Nagasaki?
No, I went to Tokyo and Kyoto.
Okay, so you didn't get a chance to go to the Shrine of the Holy Martyrs of Japan.
No, I did not.
Palmiki, because you would have had enough, Christianity there. Okay, so I'm looking forward to your question that has to do with going to Japan. All right, in Church for Dummies, so that's in about 15 minutes. And then I think that you will agree, Billy, that our awareness of mental health issues is increased over the last couple years.
Yeah. I can see that. Even myself, I do not have a mental problem now, but during the pandemic, I was like a little bit of depressed and sad, and you cannot go out. A lot of human things happen, right? As none of us have experienced something like pandemic, right?
Yeah, I think that the pandemic certainly brought to light a lot of mental health issues, and for people that maybe had them or struggled with them and didn't know. May, the month of May, we're already in April, but the month of May is Mental Health Month. Uh-huh. And in some places, including the Archdiocese of Toronto, they're actually marking the first Sunday in May as Mental Health Sunday. And so we're going to be talking about that today with Father Stefan Kapler. He's of the Southdown Institute. Talk about mental health and why that is so important, especially for those of us in the church.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a very important conversation. And a reminder then, so that people know that the first Sunday in May is Mental Health Sunday. And I think it could be observed in Catholic churches. I know the Archdiocese of Toronto is starting to do that this year.
And it's also a good thing for awareness, right? You know, people need to aware.
Oh,
that
absolutely.
Well.
And I think that that's why they're doing it, so that we're talking about it, especially in the church. People don't talk about mental health issues because they think that if you're a Christian, if you trust in God, if you have faith, then you shouldn't have mental health problems. But we know that.
No, if you trust in God, you still get cold. So
yes. That's true. That's very true. And mental health is, you're right, it's a sickness.
It's a sickness.
So that conversation, very important one with Father Stefan Kapler in our second half hour in about 25 minutes. And then, Billy, you might remember several years ago, we featured a project, a musical project called Kasha and Myrrh. Mm-hmm. And the artist is Kay Clarity. She actually, depending on what project she's working on, uses a different name. But Kay Clarity is the name that she sometimes uses. She's the artist behind Kasha and Myrrh. She's been in the show a few times, actually, and to speak about various projects, and she continues to work on different projects. And so we're going to be speaking to Kay in our second half hour, and we'll get to listen to some of her music. So that's all coming up in about 40 minutes or so. So lots happening today. A reminder, Billy, if people are not able to listen to the whole show, they can go to our website, slmedia.org, and that's where you can podcast the Salt and Light Hour. You can also listen to the Salt and Light Hour anywhere you get your podcasts. So, Billy, you ready?
I am ready.
Let's start with a song.
Music.
Yes. Here's Kay Clarity with Sweet Mother from the Catholic Chapters, Chapter 3, from her Kasha and Myrrh project.
The day he was born, the sun rose on the dark of Bethlehem. You held your baby boy, you held the Son of Man. Who could ponder this? But the girl from Nazareth, who could ponder this? But the one who mothered him, who could ponder this? But the maiden with a gift of grace, the maiden without sin. Sweet mother, sweet mother. Sweet mother, ooh. The day he left to tell the world about the life beyond the grave. This man, the God of everything, you watched him walk away. Who could ponder this but the girl from Nazareth? Who could ponder this but the one who mothered him? Who could ponder this but the maiden with a gift of grace, the maiden without sin? Sweet mother, sweet mother, sweet mother, sweet mother, sweet mother, sweet mother. Sweet mother.
That was Kay Clarity with her song Sweet Mother from her Catholic Chapters, Chapter 3, from the Kasha and Myrrh Project. And we're going to be speaking with Kay Clarity, who's behind the Kasha and Myrrh Project, in about 40 minutes. So I hope that you can stick around for that. And now it's time for Book Ends with Germaine Bagnall. Germaine, welcome back. Good to see you.
Always good to be back. Always good to share a few reads.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing what you've been reading. I don't know if it's Lenten or what do you have? I guess a children's book. Let's go with there.
Definitely a children's book and something for the adults.
Okay.
I didn't go Lenten. I probably could have, but you know, maybe there's some applicability here.
Of course.
So the first one we've got is the children's book. Uh-huh. It is by Alicia Ortego. The book is called Kindness is My Superpower.
Oh, okay.
Published by Authors Republic 2021. Uh-huh. And this book is actually part of her superpower series for children. So it's all about kindness and empathy and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And this particular one with kindness, it helps a little boy named Luca cultivate empathy, kindness, and compassion. In this book, he, right out of the gate, what I really like about this book is little Lucas, he hurts somebody's feelings. Understand, I don't like that he hurts somebody's feelings, but what I like is they get it out of the way right away.
Right.
And then the rest of the book, you're seeing him sort of rectifying that mistake.
Nice.
So, you know, he admits to his mom that he made a mistake. He identifies the mistake he made, and he's making a confession for the mistake. Mm.
Okay.
Sounds, you know, things that we all need to adopt in our life.
Absolutely.
And what I really like for a parents as a great takeaway is how the mom navigated the correction. You know, and she was both firm and gentle in her reproach and correction. And in the illustration, she's sitting down next to Luca rather than standing over him while she does this. So it's, you know, it's a message and a reminder for us as adults that to get on children's level is a really good way to reach them and speak to them.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned, we get his little mistake on one or two pages. And then the rest of the book, what we really see is how he takes that correction to heart. You know, now he's like, oh, you know, he goes, he apologizes to the mistake made. Now he's learning the different forms kindness can take. You know, kindness is sharing his toys. Kindness is helping a little old lady. Kindness is helping his dad who has fallen asleep on the couch and tucking him in with a blanket and give him a little kiss on the forehead. And so it's this great way of helping cultivate a little boy and cultivate that goodness and kindness that is that's in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that it's not this heavy-handed way. It just shows, okay, here's example 1, 2, 3, 4. Of how can be
sounds,
kind and good.
Sounds good. So accepting that we all make mistakes and then how to correct them, and then lots of ideas on what other things we can do to continue being kind. I like that.
Yeah. And as a bonus, this book is available in a bunch of formats, audiobook. You can even watch it on YouTube with your kid on the Reading Pioneers Academy.
Okay.
Yeah. So great ways to take it in.
Okay, so Kindness is My Superpower by Alicia Ortego. Okay.
Yes. And our next book, not quite Lenten, definitely a turn from what we have just spoke about. This one is by Father Gabriel Amorth. I probably butchered that last name.
Uh-huh.
And this is entitled An Exorcist Tells His Story. Ladies
okay,
and gentlemen, you heard correctly.
Yes, definitely not a children's book. Okay.
Well, so here's the thing. When I don't even know how I came across this book. I was like, oh, why not? You know, I've watched The Exorcist, Poltergeist, all these sort of movies. So I expected this sort of narrative of following like his adventures and that sort of thing. But it wasn't that, which makes it a bit more terrifying, frankly. Mm-hmm. It was a very matter-of-fact approach to what he does. It's like, oh, there's this type of exorcism. You know, I use charism oil or salt. You know, is this a big infestation for a home? Actually, once I took care of this sort of person. Okay. Like it was very clinical in its approach. And I think that's what made it a little, that's what made it a lot scary. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. Cause it kind of hits home that precisely. It's real. Like these things are real. Yeah.
Speaking to you prior to getting on the show, I in another iteration, I worked on a television show that was like following ghost hunters, and I saw some things. Yeah. And so to hear, like reading this book really harkens back to what I saw. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's pretty frightening. And the thing that one of the big takeaways is just the insidiousness of evil, where he talks about, you know, when you move away from God, you know, via sin, via like he really touched on people being addicted to consumerism being a big thing, you know, being susceptible to evil, because I guess he's treating it. It's like when people treat that as an idol, you know, and, you know, to be safer is to move towards God, you know, go to church, pray, do your rosary, you know, the things that we're always instructed to.
Mm-hmm.
But this, he really talks about the impact of doing or not doing that. It was really remarkable. And I think it's definitely worth a read.
Yeah.
Another thing I got to mention is he almost defined exorcism as a mode of inquiry, because it's all about asking questions. You know, as he meets a person, does this person even need an exorcist?
Yeah.
Perhaps does this person need a therapist? Do they need a psychologist? Do they need medicine? You know, what he goes through every reason why he should not be there before he engages with it as an exorcism, which I really respected, because when we watch the movies, that's not the case. You know, it's all about like fire, brimstone, and holy water.
Yeah.
When in actuality, it's much more benign, much more run of the mill. And very, very, very powerful. And for those who may not know, in April, just around the corner, this book has been adapted to a movie, and it's coming out April 2023, starring Russell Crowe, called The Pope's Exorcist. But I would highly recommend reading the book prior to, because we know Hollywood is going to jazz it up in a
Hollywood
fashion. But this gives Father Gabriel's very clinical approach to everything.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good. So that's good to know. Thank you. Gabriel Amorth, an exorcist, tells his story. That kind of could be a Lenten read.
Well, this is true. Repent. Get close to God.
Yeah. Get closer to God and turn away from sin and turn towards God. Absolutely. Not to scare people away, but evil is real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Gabriele Amorth, an exorcist, tells his story, published by Ignatius. The children's book that you mentioned is Kindness is My Superpower. I love that title, by Alicia Ortego. And you said that was self-published, but people can find it online everywhere. Alicia Ortego has her own website as well. Thank you. Good suggestion.
A pleasure. I like to keep it broad and give people a lot to look at.
Yeah, very broad, definitely. Okay, Jermaine, well, have a blessed Holy Week and a happy Easter, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Fantastic, and same to you.
Jermaine Bagnell is our book contributor, and he's also the producer of the Salt and Light production Working in Faith. You can find that and watch it at slmedia.org, and you can follow him at Jermaine Bagnell.
I'm Lorraine Hess, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Bigram.
The Salt and Light Hour podcast is available at slmedia.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, and the show will be delivered right to your device. And now it's time for
Church for Dummies
with Billy Chan. I'm eager to hear about your trip to Japan. So you have a question.
Yes, you know, before that, I want to share a little bit on the mass that I attend in Kyoto.
Okay.
And as you may know, in Kyoto, there are a lot of temples, but there are not a lot of Catholic church.
Okay.
I went to a church on Sunday, to attend Mass. Obviously, I do not understand a word that they say.
Yeah.
Nothing understand what they said. And there were not a lot of people. Maybe it's just too early in the morning.
Okay.
Because of jet lag, I went there at 7 o'clock. Because there's nothing open, so, you know, except for the church.
Yeah.
So I went there. One thing I noticed, which is very amazing for me, is, you know, in each pill, they put a box of alcoholic tissue paper.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Inside those like drawer, you know, the drawer for the box, right? And I thought, they are well prepared for the communion.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can just wash our hand and go and grab the communion.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't see anyone using it during communion. I was so surprised. And, you know, my wife said, you know, just don't touch it. You know, just, you know, do whatever they do, right? And at the very end of Mass, I you know, we were like, you know, prepared to leave. Everyone stand up and use that box of alcoholic tissue paper to clean the bench of where they sit.
Interesting.
They clean everywhere. It just remind me, you know, in the World Cup, you know, all the Japanese just clear their garbage, you know, after the game. You know, I think all churches should do that. And we did.
Right. Definitely take your garbage with you.
It's amazing. And you can see how much love they have, you know, inside a church in Japan. So it was just amazed when I see that.
That's good to have alcohol wipes on the pews so that people can clean. That's a good idea. Yes.
That's a really good idea. Okay, so today my question is about visiting temple. So, you know, in Japan I have visited quite a lot of temples because it's part of the Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to visiting other religions because we can know how other people worship their God, you know, the way that they do and, you know, different things. But there are a few things that I don't know if I'm doing it right as a Christian going to a temple. For example, most of the temples, they worship something like animals like wolves, cats, and like some kind of monsters. You know, they worship them. And most of the temples, they have a big bell hooking on top of the roof. Okay, and you can always ring it by using a big like rope underneath. Just beside the bell, there are a donation box. So people basically put some money in and ring the bell. So two questions here. One is, I find that so cool to ring the bell because I just want to do it.
Yeah.
Secondly, the donation part. So the contribution, the money contribution is voluntary. So you don't have to do it. But if you don't do it, it sounds like, you know, you're not part of it. So the question is, should I ring the bell, even though it looks so cool? And also, should I contribute to the temple? If I contribute, does it mean I'm part of worshiping their God?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And so the larger, I guess, question has to do with, is it okay for a Catholic to participate in a religious ritual of another faith? And even though our church teaches, I mean, there's a beautiful Vatican II document called Nostra Aetate that talks about the church's relationship with other faiths. We don't think that God is not present in some of those other faiths.
Mm-hmm.
That the truth can be found in other faiths, and God can work obviously outside of the Catholic Church. So that's something to keep in mind. But I think that the general rule is that it's okay to go as an observer, but it's not appropriate to participate in the actual ritual. You might remember that Pope Francis, when he was in Sri Lanka, he actually visited a Buddhist temple as well.
Mm.
He went as an observer. So what I would say is that it's important to find out what is the meaning of the action. So in the case of the ringing of the bell, I mean, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with ringing a bell.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not doing it as part of a religious
worship, you mean?
Exactly, of worship. Mm-hmm. If it is worship, I don't really know exactly. So I think it's important to find out what the significance or the meaning of the action or the action is, and mm-hmm. then you can decide whether I should do that. Or I mean, even some people would say, just to give you an example, that non-Jewish people should not participate in a Seder meal, for example, you know, mm-hmm. like the Passover meal.
Yeah.
Whereas I've participated in several of them, but I think if you're invited to a Jewish friend's home,
mm-hmm.
and they invite you to participate in their Seder meal, I think that that's okay. I think that for you to host your own Seder meal and play at being Jewish, that might, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but it might not be appropriate. So the ringing of the bell is a little bit interesting, or maybe—
Yeah, because the meaning of ringing the bell is to tell the God that, oh, I am here. Yeah. So just like you ring the bell to the door. That's it.
Yeah. So Buddhists do not believe in God. They don't mm-hmm. have a God.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in that sort of inner enlightenment,
yep.
right? Mm-hmm. But I think that so the gods that you're referring to are these supernatural
exactly.
Beings or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what they are that may help you as you approach nirvana or hinder you, right? Uh-huh. Because they believe in enlightenment. So I don't know if you would be in Buddhism in general. I don't think that you would be okay. doing anything that would be actually worshiping a god that is not God. I suppose that if you really believe that you're ringing the bell to alert these supernatural beings, that maybe you shouldn't do it. But if okay. you don't really think that those supernatural beings are there and mm-hmm. they're okay with tourists coming in to ring the bell,
yeah.
You're not being offensive or anything. Now, as to mm-hmm. you mentioned that there's also giving money.
Exactly. There's also a contribution box beside. I see everyone actually go and, you know, put a little con there. And
yeah, and I would say that, I mean, again, if you're doing it for superstitious purposes, maybe you shouldn't do it. But if you're doing it to support because they have expenses and they have to pay,
no.
or, you know, I think that that's okay. That's fair. Like any other church in the world, you're giving money to support the operation of the building, not to worship.
To collapse.
Exactly. Not as an act of worship. So I think that that would be okay. But it would be interesting. You know, it is a very good question.
So I, you know, I have a follow up here. So how about those, you know, as I said, there were huge monster cats, wolves, you know, as a god. So, you know, should we buy it as a souvenirs? So if we bought it, should we put it in our house?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I would say my first answer, my instinctive answer would be, sure, that's fine. You're just buying a stuffed animal. Mm-hmm. Who cares? It doesn't really mean anything to you. However, I do know that I know people that have purchased statues or little souvenirs in like Haiti or in African countries and that are related to voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
And those, in my experience, there have been some sort of connections with some sort of curse or I don't want to scare people. I would say that in general, it's probably safe if you're not really engaging in the practice. You're just buying a stuffed animal or a statue and display. You know, I used to have a little Buddha that mm-hmm. somebody gave me, and I don't think it really meant anything. I didn't know what it meant, and I burned incense. It was an incense burner. So I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with that. But if people are concerned, there's also they shouldn't feel like they have to buy the souvenir. But I don't think there's a huge problem with that.
I see. Okay, that's great. So I feel good.
Okay, good. You feel good because you didn't buy the stuffed animal, but you rang the bell.
I did not buy.
And you made us all curious to go and visit temples in Japan.
Please go. It's amazing.
Very good. Okay, Billy, have a blessed Holy Week and a blessed Easter.
Thank you very much. You too.
And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Take care.
Billy Chan, always asking good questions. You can follow him at BJoeChan. Coming up in our second half hour, Mental Health Awareness, and we reconnect with Kay Clarity of Kasha and Myrrh. So don't go anywhere. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro. Now, we know that mental health issues are real, and we know that the church is not immune to them. In some ways, clergy and people in religious life are more susceptible to these issues. The Southdown Institute was founded in Canada to address the needs of religious and clergy around mental health and addictions. As such, they provide psychological services ranging from comprehensive assessments through a residential program and also leadership consultation, outpatient counseling, and education. Because May is Mental Health Month and May 7th specifically is Mental Health Sunday, we are now joined by Father Stefan Kapler. He is the president and chief psychologist at the Southdown Institute. Father Stefan, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour.
Pedro, thank you so much for having me.
No, it's good to have you on the program. In case people are not sure what we're talking about, when we talk about mental health issues, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about a wide range of things, right? We're talking about everyday people experiencing mental health challenges, maybe, such as depression, anxiety, maybe issues struggling with an addiction, having faced a trauma or difficulty in their lives. So those can be some mental health issues. We're also talking about mental illness, right? There's also members of our community who are experiencing more severe mental illness. And that all goes under the umbrella of mental health challenges, yeah.
And I would assume that, I mean, anybody can suffer any of those issues, including clergy and people in religious life, but are there specific situations or circumstances that would make it, because of the work or because of the context, that would make clergy or people in religious life more susceptible to some of these issues?
You know, I think, as you said in your opening line, mental health issues can affect anybody at any time, right? And I think that's really the big message. Of course, we at Southdown, have traditionally focused sort of like on clergy, vowed religious. Mm-hmm. Now we have expanded that, right, to lay pastoral ministers and also to any lay person, who wishes to, receive what I would call spiritually integrated psychotherapy. So we mm-hmm. are open also for lay people for that. So it's really across the board. Anybody can be affected with mental health issues. And I think that's really the reason, if I may say, that we're grateful that May 7th, now the Archdiocese of Toronto, has become Mental Health Awareness Sunday with a special focus on the faith communities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then let's talk about that, because Mental Health Sunday is something that exists. Is it worldwide or in North America, or is it something that is specifically started for churches? What is it?
So, wow, that's a really good question. So I hope I can answer that correctly, because I can only tell you what's happening here locally, right?
Okay.
So we knew that May in Canada is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
And a lot of people in Canada are aware of that because you hear the messages on mm-hmm. TV, right? The Let's Talk campaign and all that.
Yes.
So there's an awareness around issues of mental health. But we then said, well, there is such stigma, attached to mental health in our faith communities, more so than in other communities, I think. Mm-hmm. We can talk about the whys. But because of that, we said, well, why don't we then in May see if we cannot select one of the Sundays and make it a Mental Health Awareness Sunday in our faith communities.
Okay.
We approached Cardinal Collins, and Cardinal Collins was immediately open to the idea, so very, very grateful for it. And he said, sure, let's do that. So we looked and selected May 7th, and that has become now, for the first time, at least in this Archdiocese of Toronto, Mental Health Awareness Sunday.
Okay, and I presume that the idea is that eventually that will expand to the whole country and maybe even in other countries. I know that in other places, again, this exists, but is there a hope that churches, archdiocese, diocese would embrace this idea of mental health as a ministry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is, you know, this year is really the beginning, a very small, humble kind of beginning. And my hope for this year is that we simply make some space, you know, make some room in the parishes for conversations about mental health. And if we accomplish that this year, I think it's a great beginning. And I want to give you an example. I'm going to be brief, but the example is, you know, many times, so just this 2 Sundays ago, I was helping out in one of the parishes here in the Archdiocese. And in my homily, I was including mental health examples, right? And every time you do that, Deacon Pedro, I guarantee you that after Mass, you will have a whole number, a big, you know, line of people waiting there for you saying, oh, thank you, Father, for, you know, for mentioning this. You know, I have loved ones who are struggling with this. You know, my sister is struggling with this. Somebody in my family or somebody coming in tears saying, thank you. I'm struggling with depression right now. And I appreciate you mentioning this, right? So the hope is, let's make room for this conversation so that people in our parishes know they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
It is completely okay to talk about mental health. It is completely okay to share that they may be, you know, affected by mental health issues. Just so that we get a sense of, you know, we are welcome members of our faith communities. And just as somebody who is struggling with physical health challenges is supported in our parishes, mm-hmm. we want to make sure that people with mental health challenges are supported in our parishes.
Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't have to be, it can be a more involved ministry, but it can be as simple as what you said, as mentioning in the homilies. And can I just say that that's been my experience too, because I have mentioned it as examples in the homilies, and right? I've had people approach me. They have a child or a son that died by suicide. And it's good to sort of acknowledge it, that they're right. sitting in the pews and
absolutely.
They're not alone.
Yeah. Right. Because with that, we're normalizing it, right? We're saying to people, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're not alone, right? This is an issue that's affecting a lot of people. So if this year we can open room for that and begin some conversations, fantastic. Down the road, I think it'd be absolutely marvelous. What a blessing that would be if our parishes would consider maybe beginning some mental health ministries.
Okay.
Right? And they could take many different forms. But that'd be a marvelous gift in our parishes.
Yeah, I know that you are also organizing an event on May 12th that's going to be taking place in a parish. Can you tell us a little bit about that event as an example of something that could be happening in parishes in other places?
Right. So the Friday following the Mental Health Awareness Sunday, we thought, well, let's put on a concrete event that is free of charge so that people could, who are available to attend something like that, you know, would be able to maybe come and join and hear a little bit about mental health and also learn some resources, right? So we have talks prepared that day, workshops. It's an all-day event at the Nativity of Our Lord Parish in Etobicoke. And people just need to register for it on our website. But otherwise, it's free of charge. And the idea, again, is to get people together to gather and to talk about mental health as a faith community, but also do it very concretely. And so people that come to that day will walk away with some good resources in terms of how do I navigate through this stress in my life, right? How do I cope with difficult situations? And so we're hopeful that the day will offer some practical support for people. And again, an opportunity to share with neighbors, with others about what might be happening for themselves in their own lives.
Okay, good. That's good to know. And that the reason why we're having this conversation today at the beginning of April, even though Mental Health Month is May, is to give people who are listening time to pull something together. Maybe they can, or at least for pastors or deacons to be able to mention it during their homilies. I'm going to put you on the spot and say that they can contact Southdown Institute if they need ideas as to how, you know, who
totally.
To get, if they need speakers or workshops.
Absolutely. They are always welcome to contact Southdown, but also there will be, you know, the Archdiocese, as they do with all of the Awareness Sundays,
right.
there'll be a whole package of material sent out to all parishes. So it's like an email blast.
So that'll happen in Toronto. Okay.
That'll happen in the Archdiocese of Toronto. Yes. And okay. But any other requests, people can always feel free to reach out, and absolutely, we're happy to help.
Happy to help, no matter where they are across Canada or the United States. Father Stefan, thank you for joining us today and for having this conversation, this important conversation with us today.
Deacon Pedro, thank you for inviting me. And I'm so grateful that you are giving room for this, because it's an important issue.
It is. Father Stefan Kapler is the president and chief psychologist at the Southdown Institute. You can learn more about their work at southdown.on.ca. Here now is our featured artist of the week, Kay Clarity, with Blessed Be the Name of the Lord from her Cassia and Myrrh project, Catholic Chapters, Chapter 3.
Sicut Domino placuit ita factum est. Sit nomen Domini Dominus abstulit, sit nomen Domini benedictum. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Feast, my lover, feast for us. Goodness pouring in, a table set with beauty, our love a testament. But naked we come and naked we go, blessed be the name of the Dominus abstulit, sit nomen Domini benedictum. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. News, my love, of a coming storm. Of suffering we can't bear. Oh, the cross and searing loss, in death's dark void we stare. But Mary stood and saw. Dominus abstulit, sit nomen Domini benedictum. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
That was Kay Clarity with Blessed Be the Name of the Lord from her Cassia and Myrrh project, Catholic Chapters, Chapter 3. We first met mainstream singer Kay Clarity in March 2020 as she was embarking on a truly Catholic project titled Catholic Chapters. The project, under the title of Cassia and Myrrh, was an ambitious one that would feature four albums dedicated to chant, traditional hymns, and contemporary originals. In October 21, we reconnected with Kay and spoke about her Cassia and Myrrh project. It was half done then. And now it is 75% done, with three albums recorded and the last one to come out hopefully this year. And so to tell us more, I'm now joined by Kay Clarity. Kay, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to see you. So I think that the first time we met, you were either just starting the Catholic chapters. And so, again, remind us, so the chapter one was more traditional hymns or Gregorian chant, sorry?
Yeah, Gregorian chant, and then hymns, classic hymns. Chapter three was the
more contemporary. Yeah. And these contemporaries are your own original compositions.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a progression there, mm-hmm. musically or historically, I guess, in many different ways. So do you think that you as an artist could get, or as a Catholic artist, could get to writing your own originals if you didn't start and root yourself with chant and then some of the traditional hymns? Like, why did you want to follow that progression?
Well, I wanted to do a simple encapsulation of these traditional forms as well. I think a lot of people haven't had the chance to be gently exposed to a lot of the tradition of the church. I mm-hmm. think there is sometimes a gap in that. People for a long time thought that was old or passé or something.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't get the chance to just experience it in a gentle way. And so I thought, having a bit more of a modern voice, but still being true to the form, would be a nice introduction for a lot of people to that form.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I think it is a nice trajectory into the contemporary things, because I think sometimes that's all someone does, and that's okay. I mean, I don't expect everybody to take on the kind of project I took on, but what sometimes happens is then it becomes only that. And I think that can be a lack. Either way can be a lack sometimes when we miss different pieces. So I wanted to bring all of that together.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because you are one of these artists that is very hard to pinpoint, because you have all these different projects and maybe even personas, if I can call them that,
yeah.
Because you're writing pop music.
Yeah.
But that does not fall under your Kasha and Myrrh umbrella, if I can call it that.
Yeah. So my main lane is actually my regular poetic folk things that I do as Hey Clarity. You know, that's the main starting point for me. It's the things that are most dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to be able to do a Catholic project, and I purposely put myself in the backdrop of that. I wanted it to be about God and the music in that category. It's really a labor of love. And then with the pop music, that's just something that happened because I came to LA and I knew this great producer. And I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought I would. And I just realized it was another way to integrate the things I care about, but share them with a very different audience. So a lot of the songs I write are connected deeply with even Catholic themes, but I hope not in any kind of lame way. You know, it's not like there's a right way to do it. And I think, there's universal appeal to those tracks, to people that aren't religious. Because I think what we forget is that as Catholics, we have this very rich palette to work with artistically, mm-hmm. light and dark and good and evil mm-hmm. and history. And it's just a very rich palette that I think our culture is really missing. And you see, at the worst of it, you see this really high level of degeneracy. But even without the degeneracy, it's just boring and bland. People don't have this rich vocabulary anymore to draw from. Mm-hmm. And I think people are very hungry for depth and for symbolic richness. So it's interesting that I think in a pop category, you can bring those things in, but people like it because it's a pop sound. So it's an interesting way to sort of bring some of those elements back into mainstream pop culture.
Yeah. And you're reaching audiences that you wouldn't reach because they're not going to buy Catholic chapters. You know,
exactly.
Chapter three. Yeah. They're not going to. And so it's kind of like it's kind of like undercover work.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you also feel that if you were labeled as the Catholic, K-Clarity Catholic, then you would not be able to do pop music at all because nobody would think that you would be credible or something like that? Is that happening?
Yeah, I think my instinct would be that there might be more openness to the songs themselves, depending on where you go. But I think the harder part is actually just being that and living it out, because the way I explain it, my own experience in the music industry is that I've just sort of had to perpetually self-cancel because the kinds of opportunities open to me always involve some kind of compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And so a great interest for me is to rebuild other kinds of channels of good art where artists like me who want to live from a place of high integrity and do something different can find ways to get to people. So I think that's sometimes interestingly the bigger challenge. But I also think that even with the content, we've become so narrowed in this politically correct lane that you're not really allowed to say things that offend people, of course, but the more important thing from a creative angle is that you're really just not allowed to do anything interesting because it's risky to be a bit interesting. So it's not even about, I think, sometimes even being Catholic so much as just not being afraid of just going a little bit outside of that politically correct lane. And the flip side to that, though, is that people are starving for it. They want something real.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. And I'm so glad then that you're taking those risks. And you know what I really like about it is that about what you're doing is that you did it for the Kasha and Myrrh, but I think you're doing with all your other projects that it's not about you. That the fact that you do not put your name out there necessarily, but it's the project name, means that you're letting someone else take the lead or making the music, even if you were not an artist of faith, that you're putting the music first. And that, I think, takes a lot of courage, that it's not, you know, the industry is all about me, and look at me, right? And that social media perpetuates all that. But with you, it's kind of hard to figure out who you are because it's not about you. And I like, I don't mean it in a bad way.
No, you know that's a very high compliment that I receive truly, because that is true. It is true. I if it were about ego, I wouldn't do it. There are a lot of other things I could do with my life that would be a lot easier. More profitable. And I have a heart for our very broken culture. I think it's all important. I think doing the religious work is very important because it directly feeds the soul. But I think as for a lot of Catholics, we don't look at how broad of an influence popular culture is.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people seem willing to show up there. And we forget that, I don't know, 1 billion people are following the Kardashians.
Yeah.
And we don't understand that this isn't just about some kind of arbitrary culture war. It's about souls.
Yep.
And if we don't take territory, the kids especially are growing up with that. They're growing up with really demented, ugly stuff. Like, we're so desensitized. So even someone like Taylor Swift, which a lot of people think is very vanilla light, like all of her songs are completely entrenched in sex and violence and revenge but she's kind of the cleaner version of the pop culture, and she's pretty gross, you know? Yeah. And so people are bringing their teen girls to these concerts and stuff. And I guess I empathize because there is so little pop culture that we can engage in. And it's such a harvest, you know, if we would take it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you're doing the work. Mm-hmm. And they, even if you have to do it undercover, but that's how we reach souls. And I'm looking forward to chapter 4.
Me too.
Good.
I would say it's the most ambitious part of the project, which is why it's taking longer than originally anticipated. It's 4 sacred music songs I also composed sort of in the style of Saint Hildegard von Bingen. So that very kind of haunting, mystical sound. I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm competing with St. Hildegard, but it's definitely inspired by some of that sound. And then having to do the audio speaking over top is not the easiest thing in the world. A lot of people would be surprised.
Yes.
Especially because I decided we'd also do Latin. It's going to be
a good fun for you. Time. I'm looking forward to that. And of course, the rosary that you mentioned earlier as well. Kay, good to see you. Good to listen to the new music, and looking forward to what's to come.
Thank you so much.
You can learn more about Kay Clarity and all her projects at her website, kayclarity.com. It's K-K-A-Y, kayclarity.com. If you missed any part of the interview, head on over to slmedia.org. All our programs are archived there. Here now is Kay Clarity from her pop music project, the Pax Paloma Project, the song titled Love Songs.
I won't write love songs before it's time. So many pretenders, so many butterflies, they're nothing at all. So many promises under starlit skies, they're nothing at all. So many pretenders, so many princes turned.
You're listening to Kate Clarity with Love Songs from her Pax Paloma project. And that will take us to the end of the program. Remember that you can find the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you do, please give us lots of stars and maybe a nice review so that others can find the show. You can look for me, Deacon Pedro, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you can email me, pedro@slmedia.org. Please get in touch. I love it when you write, and I always respond. Thank you for being with us. Remember to continue to pray for peace, peace in Ukraine and peace in Nicaragua and in so many places where there is conflict. Today, let's also pray for children who are learning to be kind and also for all our exorcists in the church. Let's pray for our Buddhist brothers and sisters and for those struggling with mental health issues and addictions, especially the members of the clergy and those in religious life. And as always, keep praying for each other and take care of each other. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour. Before it's time.
It's time. I won't write love songs before it's time.